It's your life. Live it. Live on AWR SID Media, from broadcast to baptism.
Pastor Mabenga, good afternoon to you. Welcome and thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Khadebe, and good afternoon to the listeners as well.
Thank you very much, Mfundisi. We are doing chapter 18. Am I correct?
Yes, sir. You're correct.
All right. Let me read it quickly, and then we get into it without further ado. We have a lot to chew on today, so I'm going to try and read it as quick as I can. 27. Only
two. Away.
don't we need your help, Mfundisi? Please don't run. It reads as follows. Now Jethro, or Jethro, the priest of Midian, and father-in-law of Moses and Moshe, heard of everything God had done for Moses and for his people Israel, and how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. After Moses had sent away his wife Zipporah, his father-in-law Jethro, or Jethro, received her and her two sons. One son was named Gershom, for Moses said, I have become an alien in a foreign land. And the other was named Eleazar, for he said, my father's name, or my father's God, rather, was my helper. He saved me from the sword of Pharaoh. Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, together with Moses' sons and wife, came to him in the desert where he was camped near the mountain of God. Jethro had sent word to him, I, your father-in-law Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and her two sons. So Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and bowed down and kissed him. They greeted each other and then went into the tent. Moses told his father-in-law about everything the Lord had done to Pharaoh and the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and about all the hardships they had met along the way, and how the Lord had saved them. Jethro was delighted to hear about all the good things the Lord had done for Israel in rescuing them from the hand of the Egyptians. He said, praise be to the Lord who rescued you from the hand of the Egyptians and of Pharaoh, and who rescued the people from the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all other gods, for he did this to those who had treated Israel arrogantly. Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and other sacrifices to God. And Aaron came with other sacrifices to God and all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law in the presence of God. The next day, Moses took his seat to serve as judge for the people, and they stood round him from morning till evening. When his father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, what is this you're doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge, while all these people stand round you from morning till evening? Moses answered him, because the people come to me to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it is brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and laws. Moses' father-in-law replied, what you're doing is not good. You and these people who have come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. Listen now to me, and I will give you some advice. And may God be with you. You must be the people's representative before God and bring their disputes to him. Teach them the decrees and laws. Show them the way to live and the duties they are to perform. But select capable men from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, and appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Have them serve as judges for the people at all times, but have them bring them every difficult case to you. The simple cases they can decide themselves, that will make your load lighter because they will share it with you. If you do this and God so commands, you will be able to stand the strain and all these people will go home satisfied. Moses listened to his father-in-law and did everything he said. He chose capable men from all Israel and made them leaders of the people, officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. They served as judges for the people at all times. The difficult cases they brought to Moses, but the simple ones they decided themselves. Then Moses sent his father-in-law on his way, And Yithro, or Jethro, returned to his own country. May the Lord bless the reading of his word, now and forever. Amen. Your take, Mfundisi.
I think every time that I go through this passage, I hear that even though you're the one appointed, doesn't mean that it's only you that can do the job.
Right.
But I think God is giving you the authority to actually lead. And in leadership, we have to create others and capacitate others so that we do not die out from to do it alone.
Right.
And besides, when we are done, who are we going to leave in charge if we haven't capacitated the people around us?
Right. Okay. All right. I like that thought. I like that idea. Perhaps it's where we can begin right now. Leaders,
okay.
Do leaders lead because God has selected them or because people have selected them?
I think we have all been called, if I can put it that way.
Okay.
And I think the selection of God is specific to our circumstances and what it is that we can offer based on what we have been exposed to. And I think that people come through to voice their will, but their will is actually governed by their knowledge of who God is and what God requires in a particular circumstance. And because of that, I would say that it is still God that elects his people and that chooses his people. And remember, when you are chosen by God, it is not the title that is going to show that you are chosen, but it is you doing the absolute will of God and actually effecting that which God wants you to do.
Where do we get it from that everyone is called, Mfundisi?
Where do we hear that from?
Yes.
From the Bible.
Where? We know for a fact that God punished Miriam by leprosy when Miriam, Moses' older sister, quibbled about leadership with Moses alongside her younger brother Aaron. Both of them complained how God only seems to be using Moses. God heard them, the Bible said, and called all three of them and told them off, to the extent that he punished Miriam with leprosy and to be segregated for 7 days. Apparently, God did not elect these two to be in the same stead as Moses, which disputes the idea that we're all called. Again, I ask, where do we get it from that everybody has been called? Because evidently, everybody else was not called. It is Moses who was called, and everybody else was supposed to be helping Moses according to God's will. Not according to Moses' will, according to God's will. Moses, Miriam, was never even mentioned. It is Aaron who was told he's going to be like a prophet to Moses. Miriam was not mentioned in the picture, which perhaps is the explanation why she was struck with leprosy. Again, the question stands, how do we get it? How do we arrive at the conclusion that everybody else is called?
I think from the beginning, I was saying that everyone is exposed to different situations in their lives, and we each have a role to play towards the perfect will of God. Now, being called does not mean that you are called to be a priest or you are called to be a leader of the people or you are. There's various functions that are given by God according to our exposures and what it is that God wants us to effect. And it's possible that even when you are a called leader, you can be in contravention of what God wills at that particular time. I mean, Joseph was called, but at the same time, he had to go the hard journey of going through all of those difficulties until he realizes the plan that God had called them for. So what you're quoting right now is a Miriam that was trying to take over a role that was not meant for her. But it doesn't mean that she didn't have a role, because you'd remember, when Moses was going to be killed, she was there guarding Moses floating there as a baby. And she was the one that suggested to Pharaoh's daughter that she's got a person that can actually assist with looking after Moses. So I'm saying that the role that she played, it couldn't have been played by Moses or any other person. It was actually fit for Miriam. And that
is a role that she was called for. But it doesn't mean that when we are called, we are super bodies that do everything. No, that's not what I was saying by that. But I was saying that we all have a role to play in God's kingdom, and hence all of us are called. I think Paul says that there's neither man nor woman, nor Jew nor Greek. We are all called now. We have all been called into this family. Yeah.
Okay, so Moses was wrong. God was wrong when he was reprimanding Miriam and Aaron.
No, he wasn't wrong. He's a God that actually reads the intents. He reads the heart.
Okay.
What he was fixing was what was making them to want to take over.
Right. Okay, not a problem. Let's talk about Jethro. Whose God is Jethro?
Whose God?
Yes, who's the God of Jethro?
Well, it looks like in the ancient Near East, people were not only following one God.
Yes.
They actually had a number of gods that they were going under, but they would actually go for the powerful one. And also they would want to appease certain other gods. And I think that is what God was coming through and trying to prove through Israel by saying that I am calling you to be peculiar, to leave all other gods so that you can remain with me. Because all of those things in reality, Paul says, they do not exist. You are serving things that do not exist.
I'm okay with that, Mfundis. What I'm not okay is with is that there is no clear God that is mentioned that is worshipped by Jethro. Do we know the God that Jethro worships?
I can't definitely say so. My reading did not go that deep.
Yes.
But one thing I get out of the text is the fact that Jethro is saying that the experiences that you are relaying to me over how God has handled you have proven to me that he is a God that is worthy of our worship.
Right.
And that is what brings him forward to offer the sacrifice that he was doing.
Okay, we will get into the sacrifice. The reason why I'm asking this is because Moses married Jethro's daughter. If Jethro's God is an unknown God, it means that Moses and Zipporah were unequally yoked. They were worshipping different gods.
Yes, that could be true. But remember, the woman was not the one that was leading in what needs to be worshipped. And I think even today, with African religious thought, when a woman marries a man, she is actually marrying that man's family and their religion.
I'm okay with that, Mfundisi, but what I'm bringing to your attention is the issue of being unequally yoked. Moses and Zipporah were unequally yoked, isn't it?
But it's difficult now to come through with unequally yoked when I'm trying to say to you that the system they were under did not give her the right to decide on the deity that needs to be worshipped. But that resided with the man that was actually taking her into marriage.
Well, we know that is entirely untrue because from the reading of the life and times of Jacob, the father and the main patriarch of the Israelites, his wife, Rachel, worshipped idols. She stole her father's idols. So she continued to be an idolater long after she had been married to Jacob.
But you're saying now that what I'm saying is untrue, yet you are saying as well that she stole the gods and the father came after them.
Right.
Meaning that she did something that was outside the norm. So what she should have done is that when her hand is taken into marriage, she should have accepted the gods of Jacob to be hers. But what she did is that she took these things and stole them without the knowledge of the husband or her father.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, which then means that she did something that was outside of the norm. And I agree with you that there is being unequally yoked. Abraham, when he wants a wife for his son, he makes his servant to swear that you are going to go back to the land of my people.
The idolaters.
But the issue there is that they were trying to, I think we had this discussion before, where we were talking about the fact that Abraham was related to Sarah and so forth.
Right, right.
What Abraham was trying to do was to get somebody that is going to be familiar
right.
with everything that they know from their upbringing. So he was trying to be equally yoked, if you can put it that way. But at the end of the day, I'm trying to say that in those days, to say you are unequally yoked
right.
would mean that you are moving with people that have a power to decide
right.
on which God they want to serve.
Right.
And that is not the case with a marriage, because you don't have the power to decide. The power to decide is only vested with the man and not the woman.
Okay, let's move on then to Moses. Verse 2, Moses sent away his wife, Zipporah, and the children. Does the Bible say it's okay for a man to live outside the congress of his wife?
I think the sending away there was not saying that he's divorcing her.
No. I'm not talking about divorce either from this. I'm talking about them living apart. Is the Bible condoning husband and wife living apart?
I'm trying to get to that.
Okay, go on.
I'm saying, Naya, that we totally discourage that. And even the biblical thought is saying that there needs to be, these two need to be one. So they need to move away from the extended relatives and family so that they can form a new family and their own family. And therefore, because of that, it doesn't look like there's a support for people to be living apart if they are a married couple. And I think the whole basis of it is that we know in marriage it is very difficult to actually run a household in a way that is going to be forging a unity of thought if people are in different places where they actually get autonomy on decisions that are pertaining to the household. Yeah.
Let's get into the issue of Moses then being advised by this person, and he takes advice of this person who has no relationship with God. Are we supposed to be taking advice from people who don't worship the same God as we do?
I think we do that every day, Naya. I think some people, even though they don't worship the same God, that they might have certain skills that we can learn from and apply it to with the way that we believe. So end of the day, Jethro says something very important. He says to Moses, if your God wills it, then you can follow it. So in other words, Jethro was not saying that, Moses, this is what you need to do. I don't care what you've been told, but this is what happens. He's trying to bring an advice on leadership, and he's saying, but at the end of the day, everything is overridden by the will that will be coming from your God. If he permits it, then I think it is something that will help you, Moses. And I think all of the time, including, I mean, even in the church, the rules of order we use, they were not invented
by
us.
Right,
It is systems of governance that we found, and we are applying them. Yeah.
Okay. I like that. Let's go to verse 12. Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and other sacrifices to God. And Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law in the presence of God. My curiosity here is, so as far as this narrative, there is nothing wrong with worshiping with priests of different gods. We worship and those priests come and minister to us. We have no problem with that as far as this narrative is concerned. We can have other priests like Jethro, the priest of Midian, to a god we don't know, to come and stand on our pulpits and preach about our God. We have no problem with that, right?
Yes, we do. And the issue here is that Jethro was not coming through to worship his own gods, but he was actually coming through to worship the God of Moses. And it looks like the people that came to join that were in the community were not unfamiliar with what Jethro was doing.
No, I'm okay.
I'm
not suggesting that he was worshiping a foreign god. I'm suggesting he was not circumcised as the others were supposed to be circumcised. He was not a priest of this particular congregation or denomination. He was not an Israelite. He was a Midianite. And he was a priest of a different god. But still, they allowed him on their altar to worship their god, granted, but on their altar. Should we also then learn from Moses and the elders to allow other priests from other faiths on our altar so long as they claim to be worshiping our god? That's my question there, Mda.
But I think this is something that we do all the time when people have turned from whatever it is that they used to believe in. Like Jethro is saying here, that from the account that you're giving me, I feel as though this God of yours is the God that needs to be worshipped. That is a clear turn or clear realization on what it is that needs to be done. And I don't think we've ever blocked people that are like-minded, that want to learn what it is that we want them to learn, from actually doing so and worshipping with us.
I'm not quite sure, Mfundisi.
I don't think there's an activity on that.
I need you to clarify this, Mfundisi, because as far as this is concerned, this is happening on the same day. This so-called conversion and this so-called worship is happening on the same day.
Yes.
So I have never seen, and you can educate me here, Mfundisi. I have never seen in the Seventh-day Adventist Church where a person would be converted today from being a priest of a different faith, and on the same day they are converted, no baptism, no confession of faith, nothing, by virtue of them saying, I now believe, we put them on the pulpit, on our altar, and they minister to us. Has that ever happened, Mfundisi?
I have never seen it happening, but I think now you are talking about ministering.
Yes.
And you are not talking about an atoning and prayer. That is what Jethro was doing. He wasn't preaching to the Israelites. He was actually atoning for his sins in worship of the God that he had just heard about.
Let's read what happened to Fundis.
Based upon that, I'm saying that we've seen countless times where people are saying that this is the way I was going, but now I've changed my way, and immediately they are able to worship and pray with us. Immediately. Not after baptism, not at other times, but immediately.
So here, he was not praying, and he was not atoning. I'm going to read it verbatim. This is Exodus chapter 18 from verse 12. Then Yitro, or Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and other sacrifices to God. Other being the operative word for me, burnt offerings and other sacrifices to God. And Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law in the presence of God. Moses' father-in-law in the presence of God. So here, they are not doing anything. They are led by this man in him bringing burnt offerings and other, God forbid we have other sacrifices come and be put on our altar. They bring nothing. They are led by this person. He is the one that stands at the altar and speaks. He's not praying. He is delivering a sacrifice. The action of slaughtering that animal is done by Yitro. He is the one that's breaking bread.
I think where we are differing is what was Jethro doing?
Yes.
I feel that he was doing an atonement and worship, because back then there was no such a thing as just praying. There had to be something that you had to put down there to atone you so that you are able to approach God with thanksgiving and whatever it is that you need to bring to him.
But the Bible doesn't say he was atoning though, Mfundisi.
No, I'm trying to say to you that my understanding is the fact that he was in prayer and connection with God. I don't see him as what we would equip today or equate as actually standing up and teaching. And I'm saying that the reason we are saying that we don't allow that in our pulpits, it's because we do not know what it is that you're going to teach if you don't know anything to teach.
Yeah, and Jethro barely knew this God. It was told about it a couple of hours, and he's standing at the altar and leading worship?
I don't even know if he barely knew him, but one thing I do know is that he had fully accepted him. And I think because of that, it would be very difficult to actually compare that with what we have running now in our churches, and to actually say that what we have based organizationally as something to protect the flock is actually in contravention of what the Bible is teaching, because I don't see him teaching. And I'm saying, like with Philip as well,
he's leading worship.
He
was not teaching, but he was leading worship. And that's my contention. He is the one leading, and everybody else, the elders, Aaron, Moses, everyone is following the leadership of this person who has known God for 2 minutes. Of course, that's a hyperbole, but the point is same day.
I'm trying to propose to you, but I think you're not accepting it, Naya, that it happens all of the time with us as well, because we have a Sabbath school that does not have membership as a pre-requirement. And we have people coming in there and leading and doing different things. We never say, no, you're not allowed to. And I'm trying to say that we see that happening the whole time. But now if you want to say that is actually standing up in the pulpit and teaching, that is where I'm saying that I have a different interpretation than you. But I mean, the whole time in our church, we allow people to come through. They can be members of the Sabbath school without necessarily being members of the church.
Well,
it's this, allowed.
Sabbath school never happens at the pulpit.
Well, I take it maybe the places that you worship in have got a designated pulpit.
Yes.
But remember, there are people that don't even have that luxury. Everyone stands at the same place when they're going to talk. But I think what's important here is the fact that what is it that you're going to say when you are going to talk? Are you coming to teach, or are you coming in worship?
Okay.
And I'm saying that the Adventist Church does not prevent people that do not that are not our members from actually worshiping with us and praying and doing everything else that we're doing.
Right.
We don't. And we don't stop people from singing or even leading in song.
Yeah.
A lot of the people that are in these groups and everything, they're not even members of the church.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
So I'm saying that in that respect, I would feel that we are still compliant with what Jethro is doing.
Yeah. Okay. I hear your footage. I'm going to leave it right there. Like I said, we have a lot to cover, but our time is up. Thank you very much for coming through and talking to us.
I am ever glad when the time is up, because it means I can breathe.
I am grateful nonetheless.
Thank you very much, Khadebe. I know why you do what you do, Khadebe. It's not because you don't understand, but
yes.
I know it's because you are trying to get to the level of somebody that's listening out there that probably needs answers to these questions.
Indeed.
And I do sincerely hope that where we have not maybe successfully answered or answered to the contention, that the Holy Spirit will actually come through, so that this becomes something that is understandable to the viewers. But thank you very much.
Yes,
you're doing a great job.
Thank
God
you.
God will bless you.
Thank you.
But remember, don't take over my job, or else what happens to Miriam is coming for you too.
I understand. That's never going to happen. I'm never going to be a pastor, so don't worry. I'm never rejecting your job, Mpunis. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful preparation day, Mpunis.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.